When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sports Joe presents the GAA Hour.
You're all very welcome back to the GAA Hour. We've had a break for a few months, but the club season, it's in absolutely full swing now at the minute. And between that, the All-Stars, I think it was a brilliant week to come back, Lee, yesterday. I know myself, between TG Cahir, between Clubber, I was flicking between the laptop, up on the phone, looking at the matches and the results and trying to keep up with different games. There's one stream on, you had St. Lomans and Naas on, that started at 1:30. Then you click on, you see Kilmacud are coming up against RD, St. Mary's up in RD. Then David Clifford is playing 30 minutes later. It's all happening at one time. Kildallanion are coming on against Clonlara. You're kind of balancing between the two games. It's hard to keep up with it, but it's a great weekend to come back, I think, for us.
Yeah, it is. And it's one of them weekends where afterwards, on a Monday, going into work, you just want to talk about it and you want to dissect it and get into it. So it's just the perfect weekend to come back with a podcast. And this will be us now until the end of the club season. So loads to get stuck into. Can't wait.
Absolutely, yeah. That's it. You have so much to talk about. I suppose we're going to start on Saturday with the Cara Finn and Ballina game. I know you were writing about this game yourself, Lee. I suppose the big kind of talking point at the end of it was that the Ballina manager, Niall Heffernan, he kind of came out swinging after the game because these boys had shipped a lot of criticism mm-hmm. after the Mayo final, and it obviously was a disappointing Mayo final. It was 6-4. But yeah, he was speaking off the ball and he defended his team, and in fairness to him, he had good grounds to defend the team from their performance. Like what he said was, empty cans make the most noise. For people to say we're a defensive side is absolute rubbish. We were the highest scorers in the Mayo Championships. The facts point to themselves. On the day we kicked some poor wides, he's talking about the Mayo final here, mm-hmm. but it's criticism by some people who are getting paid a lot of money to stand on sidelines and make comments. They're not looking at the effort put in by amateurs on the pitch and on the sideline who are trying their best. In fairness, they did get a bit of criticism after that game. John Mahan on the commentary and, of course, Joe Bradley.
Oh, yeah. And I think Pat Spillane did a big column on them as well. But do you know what? They're probably just a little bit unlucky because the thing with the club season is, and you know this yourself, we're kind of at a premium when it comes to like content to write about and to get stuck into. It's not like the inter-county season. So when columnists see a game like that Mayo final 6-4, every single one of them are going to latch on to it, you know, because it's their way of filling the page, basically. So they probably got more criticism than they would have done, you know, if it was maybe a county match or whatever, because there would have just been another game really quickly around the corner, a bigger game maybe to look forward to. But I thought they were excellent against Corfin, to be fair. Corfin, unbelievable. But the way they attacked the game and they showed a side to them that we weren't expecting. And like, if you're not from Mayo, you wouldn't have got to watch a lot of Ballina this year. So you're just reading about them and then you're kind of expecting this, oh no, it's going to be really dire and defensive. But like, even from the start, they won the toss and they decided to go against the wind for the first half.
What do you think of that?
I thought it was interesting. Yeah, I mean, like, it was sort of a sign of intent, you know. It was just like, you know, let's let's go at them. And then in the second half, when, and I think I tweeted it at halftime, is like, this is everything to be like a shootout.
Yeah.
Because they're going down, they've got the win in the second half, they're really, really going to go for it. And if you look at the throw-in from the second half, the first thing to do is launch it in, win a mark, stick it over the bar, and you're like, here we go, a proper game of football.
Yeah, at halftime I was like, they have a chance here. You were hoping they keep it to maybe a small bit tighter than six, and maybe it'd be five or four. They got it down to four, I think, just before halftime. Mm-hmm. You're thinking, right, we have it here. In general, I kind of like to play with the wind in the first half, and I think build up that lead and then try and hold on.
Yeah, I think they were just thinking, like, this is Cora Finn, probably the best known attacking team in the country at the minute. And if you don't get that lead at halftime, and you know you're going to be playing against the wind, against a team like them, who are going to really go after you, then you've got, you know, your backs are really against the walls. Maybe just a bit of tactical play there. But Cora Finn themselves were just, they are a joy to watch. You know, Joe Brawley made the 200 mile trip or something, you know, just to go down. And
he stayed in the hotel in Galway and had a picture of Mickey Hart left on his on his bed.
Yeah, a free picture of Mickey Hart. Yeah, so he thinks, you know, they're like the beacon of purists or whatever way you want to call them, but they are brilliant to watch. I did really enjoy it, and they nearly brought the best out of Ballina as well.
Yeah, like I didn't think there was a huge difference in the styles Ballina and Cora Finn played on the day. Like Ballina, like, as you were saying, you're expecting this to just be like 15 behind the ball just because of what you've heard. And I hadn't been watching the Mayo Championship before that county final. So, but they kicked the ball nearly all the time. Sometimes they were even kicking it too much into the full forward. They weren't overly defensive. And, you know, they played a decent set, like, which is fairly obvious. They're Mayo champions. You're not going to win that if you're not a good team.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, and I think it was just more credit to Cora Finn, you know, who had just lethal finishers. Obviously, Gary Sayce, I wrote about him, 39 years old, kicking 5 points. Did you see the solo dummy?
Oh, and then the wind helped him there. In fairness, it did.
But it did the Roberto Carlos thing where it was like the ball could not have looked more wide, and then it curled in.
It was beautiful.
Precisely enough just to hit the inside of the point and then go over the bar. It was genuinely unreal to watch. And Lee Brannan did something similar the week before. His was maybe slightly better just because of the angle he was at.
Yeah, but the camera didn't get it as well.
Yeah, well, it was like foggy weather and stuff. Yeah, the camera didn't capture it, but he sold the defender and did that, and it was just class. But we were sort of talking about this is like Gary Sayce isn't just, you know, a full forward. Oh, he's older, but he'll win ball and he'll get scores for you. He's a guy who loves to get involved. He comes straight out into comes deep into the middle of play. And there was one instance in the first half where he kicked a through ball. I can't remember to the Cora Finn forward, but it just completely freed him up, threw on goal, and only he'd lost his footing because of the surface and maybe a bit of pressure from the defender. But he would have been through on goal, and it was just such vision. Mm. And like, I don't know, he plays with like a street footballer sometimes, like that adventure and all, but that's what Cora Finn are encouraged to do.
When you have that experience with him, you can kind of just do what you want, I'd say, and that's exactly what
Who's going to shout at him?
Who's going to give out to him? Yeah. Well, he was spraying passes. He was like Colin Cooper there, the way he was kind of stepping back and then just pinging a pass into the full forward. He gave one absolutely beautiful one. I wanted to ask you about the wind. I know Desi Hutchinson, Ballygunner hurler, said after the Sarsfields game that we don't really care about the wind. The wind doesn't make that much difference at this level of the game. Uh-huh. He's talking about hurling. In football, it's huge, isn't it? You could even see David Clark's kickouts in the first half. One or two of them went straight out over the sideline. And every game we watched this weekend, the wind was just, the wind just didn't stop all weekend. Like, but is it, maybe it's not the biggest, it is still big in hurling, but it's a huge thing in football, I'd say.
Oh, it is a massive thing. Like, and you see all the corner forwards going out in their warm up, and there's no grass left on the pitch because they're flicking it up in the air every 2 minutes. You know, I think a lot of that's for show too, to be fair. But just seeing it and then licking their fingers for some reason.
Testing the wind, like, yeah.
But the wind is a massive thing. Of course it is, you know, because it dictates how your team's going to play. It dictates your range in terms of what you're going to be shooting. Even as a defender, it dictates what you're going to be doing because you can afford to let the forward go a bit deeper because he can't do as much damage there.
Yeah, like in that win the other day, you nearly have to be on the 21 to score.
Yeah, that's it. Like in Salt Hill, wasn't it? I mean,
I seen some people were tweeting there should never be a game in Salt Hill at this time of the year. Like,
well, and it's testament too to like how good these two teams were. You know, 16-12, that's a decent scoring game in those conditions this time of year.
Yeah.
But no, the wind is massive. Of course it is. And like, Corfin, did they change their goalkeeper at halftime as well?
Yeah, I don't know what story was there.
Well, they wouldn't say. It didn't say afterwards. I don't know if anyone had digged any deeper, but I'm wondering if the second goalkeeper, because they were against the wind then the second time around, maybe just had a longer range in terms of his kick, or it could have been an injury.
Your man is the Galway goalie, Bernard Parrott. Yeah. So you're hardly taking him off. Like,
I don't know.
Over his kickouts. Like.
It probably was an injury sort of thing. He wouldn't give it away anyway. But yeah, no, a really entertaining game. And then against the wind too, fitness becomes so important, because there's the question with Corfin, we know they can kick it and we know they can attack, but can they run at you? You know, do they have the legs? And they do. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
well, you see,
serious.
That comes from they have two young lads in the team. Well, they've actually a few young lads in the team, but the two that really stood out at the weekend were Patrick Egan, and mm-hmm. he has an unbelievable engine on him.
Yeah.
This fella in midfield kicked two brilliant scores, but was just on the ball. Even in, as you said, when it comes down to the fitness, who can stay going into the last 15 minutes, as Henry Shefflin famously said on his Lucozade ad, the last 15 minutes are the championship minutes. But he was just, do you know, he's only 19, yeah. 20, I'm not sure what age he is exactly now, but very young looking chap, and stayed going. And Jack McCabe was unbelievable as well.
Yeah, crazy dude. Like, I think he got 5 points and Gary Sykes got 5 points. They're both on the full forward line, and there's 20 years difference between 19 years old and 39 years
old. They're calling him young bull and old bull somewhere. I read the report.
Unbelievable. So. Like, yeah, but like, what an unlikely duo. Do you know, I'm sure when they were growing up, he probably grew up watching Gary kicking points.
Yeah, it's like Adam Screeny and James Mahon for Kilcormac in the hurling, just a big man. Gary Sykes isn't maybe too much bigger than Jack McCabe, but you know,
physically and
it's good that they can link up. Like, you know, it's the experienced lad brings the younger lad into it. Like,
it's brilliant. Like, and he'll just learn so much from him. And obviously, they're both very young. But if you're a Galway fan, you can't help but look at that and think there's exciting things coming.
Yeah, there was a few others as well. Like Tony Gill was playing centre forward. He obviously got the goal in the corner in the Galway final. Didn't have as good a day this time. But there was a few other lads on the Corfin team as well, so they're coming for us. Gavin Burke, I think he's a young man. I haven't seen too much of him. He was cornerback and he was lively. But Corfin they could be a common team, like a team who have as good a chance as anyone. Like, Dylan McHugh is the captain, kicked two huge points when they were kind of coming under pressure. I thought, they were missing Kieran Malloy. McHugh was going brilliant. So. Yeah, they probably have as good a chance as anyone now.
They do. Like, it wasn't that long ago, you know, they'd won three in a row before COVID. Then the COVID season happened and there was no provincial championships. And then it was Kilkoo and then Crokes last year, I think is the order of it. But like, a lot of that team are still there and they've got this injection of youth coming through. So you've got a brilliant plan there. You know, so many teams, they have a bit of a golden generation and the fall off is just so massive. But, you know, if you can just keep that sort of conveyor belt running and if you can mix and match and get that blend right, which they look like they're doing, they're in with as good a shout as anyone.
Well, they definitely are, Lee. I think they won a minor. I'm not sure if it was this year or last year. They're four adult teams. Their intermediate team relegated Kilcairn Clonburn this year, Shane Walsh's club. So they were delighted about that. I know there was, In the middle of the year, it was Egan and McCabe, or some of these young lads, were involved with the intermediate team, and you know they were called up to the senior team by Kevin Johnson, who, in fairness, he's had some start to his managerial career as well. Mm-hmm. Sligo man, one with Tour Lestran and one with Ballintober in Mayo, and now is doing so well with Corfin. So I know you'll have Glenn up there. Kilmacud are obviously going to be up there. Kilmacud, Nace would be thereabouts. I'd have them right up there. Corfin at the top. I'd have them actually as favourites.
You've Corfin as favourites?
Yeah.
It's a big call.
You've
been listening to a lot of Joe Brawley.
Yeah, too much. Who would you have?
I think my basis is like Kilmacud Crokes will have the confidence of winning it last year, and that's like a dangerous place to be, a team as good as them, so dominant as them. And you got to remember, last year they didn't have Paul Mannion for most of the championship and they got him back just in time for the final, and even then it was half of Paul Mannion, you know, because he's just back from a really serious injury. So they have him in full flow this time around, so he'll be really dangerous. But I also think Glenn were a whisker away of winning it, and that was without Kieran McFaul, who is arguably their best player. So now he's back in the mix. They have that sort of experience and confidence of winning an Ulster title last year and pushing on again this year. And there's a bit of a theme of the team who lost the final goes on to win it the following year. Like Kilcoo did that, and then Kilmacook Crokes did that themselves, and Glen lost the final last year. So that's why I'd have them maybe just
maybe. Ben, yeah. Probably just they were a little bit disappointing the last against Carrigan. Maybe Carrigan are a good team to beat. Yeah. They've Clonal the year before. So that'll obviously be... They're at the Ulster final now, Glenn and Scotstown, isn't it?
It's the semi-finals. Yeah, okay. Glenn play Neve Connell and Trillick play Scotstown.
So none of them teams are going to be easy beaten either.
You think of someone like Neve Connell and Scotstown, the way they won their games in the quarterfinals.
Stand to them.
You know, yeah, like last minute stuff, real heroics. Like, you know, you can't help but do things again and think, well, this is our story, this is our day.
Year. Like in Scotstown, like, sure, they have some amount of Monaghan players. Like, you know, the core of their team is they've Began, the Hugheses, Conor McCarthy, like Jack McCarron, literally the best players in Monaghan. Like, so they'll have every chance too. Putting Carfin up the top, it was being a bit writing off the Ulster teams a bit soon. But look, you're here to remind me
about that.
Nace and St Lomans. This was the first match I was watching yesterday. So this was at 1:30 as you're sitting down for a big day of GA. I knew the hurling was coming up at 2:00, so it was ideal to have this one starting at 1:30 and got it up on Clubber. Kim Coden and RD was on at the same time, but I kind of fancied Nace and St. Lomans to be a better game. In my predictions for the weekend, I actually tipped St. Lomans. I thought that they were kind of building and coming, and like they obviously have that heartache. You remember that game they lost to Moorfield? They were 5 up going into injury time in the Leinster final. I thought this was going to be their year to, I suppose, make the breakthrough there and win that Leinster title. And they started off, they had the wind, in fairness, so it does make such a huge difference. But they did start off very well and were leading by 3 points at half time, had kicked some lovely ones. Rowan O'Toole was kind of dictating the play, just fresh from being an All-Star nomination at the weekend. He was centre forward, just kind of pulling the strings, kind of a bit similar to Gary Sykes, the way he'd be, you know, picking passes into the full forward line. And in there, you had Shane Dempsey, who was on fire in the first half. He kicked 2 unbelievable points. And then a brilliant goal just before half-time. So they went in 3 points up, and... yeah, Nace had the wind, and Nace, actually, from half-time to the end of extra time, St. Lomans didn't score again from play.
Yeah.
They got 3 more frees in the game. Missed a lot more frees too, but it was Nace's legs that won it.
Yeah, and very professional outfit now, Nace. Nace reminded me a little of Glen in the sense that it was such a big thing for them to win their county. They went, maybe, like, was it 30 years or something before they'd won it? 2 years ago,
yeah, they've three in a row done that.
Now they've 3 in a row done it, and that's very like Glenn had never won it in Wendary, and now they're 3 in a row, and like now they just got a real confidence about them and a real assurance at that level. The Glenn have obviously went one further in the provincial championship. I think Nace haven't won Leinster yet, but they know they belong there at least, and they have history there and familiarity there, and you know they weren't panicking at half time like as you say, and they just had to tweak things, and they knew that they could rely on like their fitness. And then when you've got Dark Irwin up front as well, yeah, I mean, you're always going to be in the show. Was it like 1.7 he finished with?
Yeah, 1.6 from play. And for some reason, he wasn't named on their team to start the game. Maybe he had a small injury concern coming in. But any time I've seen him, he's just an unbelievable player. A brilliant man to take a score off the left foot. Very strong as well, has speed. He has it all, really, Kerwin. And yeah, he was unbelievable. I suppose I did say that was the Nace's legs. Like, I wouldn't say that Lomans were like weren't as fit as Nace ran like that, but just they ran out of steam a small bit. And I suppose when Kerwin got that goal in extra time, like that was an unbelievable goal, wasn't it? Like, and a great one. You love to see it. Like, there's still a place for the long ball in, and like when you have a man like him in there, just let it in and the finish.
Yeah.
I love that when a lad gets the ball and hits it quick, like, and hits it low along the ground. Brilliant finish. Yeah. Brilliant. Love that Route 1 football.
Especially, but that's Route 1 football at a tee, because he catches it from a ball in, or a lovely ball in, turns, barely takes a step before, you know, he unleashes it. So, like, within seconds, you know, you're St. Lomans, the ball looks to be in a position where it's not going to cause you much danger, and then it's in the back of your net.
Yeah,
like it must be such a blow to take for them, and Nice just were able to really build on that. Then they're just they're fantastic. I'm looking forward to see how they'll fare out against Kilmacock Crokes.
Exactly. There was two. David Goff was ref in that one, and there was a controversial one he gave. I suppose he's done this before. He Owen Doyle on the opposite side. He'd know all about it because Goff actually sent him off. Gave him a second yellow for not wearing his gum shield. That was about 3-4 years ago. Ronan O'Toole got booked in this one for not wearing his gum shield. He pulled it out of his sock and threw it in then within seconds. There's another kind of a controversial one as well. It was the Lomans centre-back, David Whelan. He was down injured with a knee injury. And I suppose, I remember in the hurling semi-final this year, we were giving out about Nicky Quaid and the ref for stopping the game. When the team had a bit of momentum, as a momentum break or whatever, and sometimes players go down with injuries to stop the momentum. David Whelan went down, and Goff obviously thought that he was, putting it on. But Whelan was down holding his knee, and the St. Lomans physio was in with him. And Goff ordered him off the field, and the St. Lomans physio was bullying. Like he was, as he was making his way off, you could see him on the camera. He was roaring at Goff and giving out to him. And then Goff goes over to your man, and he's kind of like, "Will you get up? Like, we're play on, like." But Whelan was in serious bother, and he was like, "Man, my knee is actually in trouble here." And eventually, Goff had to stop the game and bring the physio back on. Then, so it was just a funny moment, like. And then the crowd, but I don't know, it was both set of fans, but definitely the St. Lomans fans were like, "Whoa, hey!" Yeah.
Just cheer. It's a brave move from a referee to like assume that you're making not the injured, most of an injury, like, and then
like he has to go off, like,
to get that wrong, I'd say he's like, "Oh, never again." But then he's a man.
At least he made it. Right, and did it.
Didn't make him suffer for it. The gum shield one's interesting as well, because it's like some referees just have their thing, don't they? Like a little weird thing that they're obsessed with. I was saying this. We all know it when you're playing, but when I manage these Belfast ladies team, I noticed it a lot more because you just think every decision goes against you. But as you get to know the referees in the division, each of them had like a little peculiar thing. There was one referee who was just obsessed with steps. So like you knew going into that is like, girls, take your solos and your bounces. Even when you feel like you nearly don't need to, because it's better than giving away a free kick in a dangerous position. And then there was another ref, and now he really did my head in. I needed to make a sub quickly. Maybe it was late on in the game. And I'd written down the number and the last names of the two girls. And then she ran on to give it to him. And then next thing, she came back with me, and the referee was like making a gesture. I had to write their full names. And I was just like, "Oh, you're killing me now, dear, today." But they're doing it, I suppose, they're thinking in their heads, literally to the letter of the law. And it's just very David Goff, isn't it?
Like, do footballers, do you wear your gum shield matches? Do you see many lads or team throwing them in the sock? Because it does happen.
Most of them, I'd say, throw them in their sock at our level. I do wear a gum shield, but then I got my top four knocked out. So that was very expensive to get fixed. Yeah, playing football, yeah.
Not wearing a gum shield?
Yeah, not wearing it. I was only 18. It wasn't mandatory back then. That's how old I am. Yeah.
I was going to say, well,
you deserved it. Yeah. So I actually wore gum shields before they were mandatory, because then after that, I was like, I'm never going through that again. It was awful.
Yeah, but a lot of lads do throw them in the sock.
Yeah, no, 100%. Some of them don't even bring them with them. It's just got that stage, especially the old hands that they didn't have to play with that rule before and they don't want to now. And it's like, if you're playing like junior intermediate level, they maybe just think the referee's not going to touch them on it. But and more often than not, the referees don't bring it up unless you mouth back at them. And then they do that thing where it's like, "Wait a minute, do you not have your mouth guard in?" You're like,
to get you, like,
yeah, even if you've got a good point. It's like when you argue with your girlfriend and you've got a good point, but they bring up something, from the past.
Are they that uncomfortable, the gum shields?
I never
used them as a boxer, though.
Yeah, with boxing, they've never bothered me. The gum shields, I got a good, decent one that's fitted. I don't really see what the big deal is.
You see somewhere having their gum shields, or they're kind of have them half hanging out of their mouth. How is this?
I suppose if you're a real shouter on the pitch, you love barking.
Yeah, that's true. You don't sound right with the gum shield.
It's a bit weird with the gum shield. So they're always taking them in and out for that. And then taking them in and out is nearly the bit that causes you to be out of breath, because if your heart rate's flying and then you're taking it out, you're taking that little second to, sort yourself and then get it in again. And then I'd say it's maybe more in your head than anything. But
It's a funny one as well. I seen it. I think it was Sam McCartan, the St. Lomond centre forward, just had the gloves in the back of his shorts, like, for a lot of the game. Like, what is the story there?
That's a great question. I have no idea. I'm just terrified of losing them. County level. No one's giving me gloves for free. They're expensive. I am not putting them in the back of my shorts. I don't know. Just leave them on the sub bench if it's a dry day.
I think it'd be distracting, like, having them there in the back of your shorts. Like.
Never. Sure. And then someone will just pull them, or I don't know. That's people with too much money, or they've got a sponsorship. Too many shorts or too many gloves.
Yeah.
And maybe they're doing a favour. They didn't want to wear the gloves, but they're trying to plug a mate's company.
But
they
won't wear them in their hands. No. Like, so it's not doing a great job. So Naas and Kilmacud in the final in 2 weeks. By the sounds of you, you're giving Naas a chance?
Yeah, you got to give them a chance.
They obviously have a chance.
You got to give them a chance, you know, especially because they're not just the new boys of this level anymore. Like I said, they have experience at Leinster and they've got hurt there as well. And but also the confidence of knowing that they belong. So they'll go in it with confidence. Kilmacud Crokes just have a bit of an aura about them at the minute, as you would being All-Ireland champions. But they've always been, or they've been there and thereabouts in the last few years. They were in the final year before that as well. They're going for three in a row in Leinster.
Exactly. If they win it, they're joint on the top of the Roll of Honour with Vincent's and Portlaoise with seven. So probably a big one for them.
That's it. Yeah. So I mean, you got to just say the champions are probably going to be the favourites, but I'd definitely say Naas have.
Yeah, Naas are a team who are on the crest of a wave, because their hurlers are in the Leinster semi final next weekend against the Fianna as well. Three of them are dual players. Brian Byrne, he was playing yesterday, James Burke, and young Dara Gearan, who won an All-Ireland Under 20 with Kildare last year. So that club is just on the crest of a wave right now. While we're talking about Leinster football, we'll go on to Kilmacud. As we were saying, the wind was huge and they were 10 points up at half time, and Paul Mannion's on fire. He had four unbelievable points. They're up on Clubber. For anyone who wants to see it with the wind, and you think the game's over, 110 to 3 points.
Yeah. I mean, like, Paul Mannion, first of all, is just outstanding, like, and what a weapon to have. I made the point earlier that they got to the All-Ireland final last year more or less without him because of his injury. So to have him this year is just an almost scary thought. And then I'm just sort of thinking, what's it like being Paul Mannion? Because he's just part of the most dominant club, and then he was part of the most dominant county team for most of his career. So, like, he knows nothing but winning at the absolute very top and consistently. Like, he wasn't even there for that little dip in Dublin, you know, the 2 years or 3 years where they didn't win the All-Ireland. But he left and on a high, and then he came back and he's like, right, lads, I'll win this for you again. And then man of the match in the final. He's just, what it must be like to be Paul Mannion. Like, he's just incredible.
Yeah, and Wooly said he had a few Heinekens at the All-Stars as well. So they obviously did him no harm. But the second half, I was obviously watching Kildare Danion, Clonlara was on the telly, St. Lomans and Naas was on here on Clubber. Only had one laptop, so I had to switch over when I checked it on Twitter on my phone that the score was 110 to 1-8. Okay. RD St. Mary's got 1-5 without reply. Kieran Keenan got 3 marks, and he was the one that kind of kick-started the revival. And when they got it down to 110 to 1-8, this is when I got onto this game on Clubber. I was going from screen to screen like a madman on yesterday. Really tough day on the couch now.
Are you okay?
That was tough, but I'm back in the race now today. But when they got it down to two, they had chances. Mm-hmm. They had chances to kick it level and miss them. But, you know, it was worrying times there for Kilmacud Crokes. It shows what the wind can do, I suppose.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it just shows when you're playing a top team as well and a team full of confidence. And that'll give other teams confidence too, seeing that you can get at Kilmacud Crokes, you know, that they're not maybe unbeatable. But then at the same time, when you're like as undefeated in championship for as long as they are, when they have these slips, they're so few and far between. So like chances of them playing poorly or letting a team back into it again the next day is even slimmer, do you know what I mean? And then I think Shane Walsh kicked 5 points. I was sort of making the point to you beforehand that, like, he said after the Dublin Championship final that, 2023 hasn't been my year and I'm really looking forward to 2024. And then I sort of thought, wait a minute, he's won a club All-Ireland in 2023. He got to the National League final with Galway in 2023. He won the Connacht Championship with Galway. He's won a Dublin Championship with obviously Kilmacud Crokes, and now he's in a Leinster final, which they could possibly win as well, all in this year that he's been apparently terrible.
He's at a stinker, isn't he?
Oh, it's just, I'd hate to have a year like that, to be honest. It'd be awful.
Yeah, sure. It was all our fault, though, for having him on the podcast here. Oh, yeah. What can you do? But Kilmacoe Crokes, they always seem to be pulling new players out of it. Like, I haven't seen much of Darragh Dempsey. He was a Dublin under 20 this year, and he got the goal for them yesterday. And, you know, Luke Ward is obviously a young player. He came on and got a point. Shane Horne came on and got a point. These were the crucial points.
Yeah.
Because there was only 4 points in it at the end. Mark O'Leary's another new enough face in the team who's doing very well wing forward. So, yeah, they obviously have huge strength and depth. And they will be favourites going into that final against Naas. The other football game from this weekend was St Bridges and Mo Hill, and it was a low scoring game, 1-7-6. Mo Hill were leading by 4 points to 3 at half time. They had the wind. Keith Byrne was he's obviously their star man, and he was going well. He kicked 3 from play and a free, but Bridges got the goal and won it then. So judging by that, they'll be up against Cara Finn,
yeah,
in the Connacht final.
No, there will be. I think it's 10 years on since they won the Club All Ireland final.
Yeah.
St Bridget's, but I'm not too sure if many survivors in that team, if any. But yeah, they're going to be up against Cora Finn. I think everyone knows that. But you know, when you get 3 games like this in a semi final, you earn your spot, you know, and they'll go in with every bit of confidence, I'm sure. It'll be a lot more entertaining, I think.
Yeah, well, especially a traditional club like them, like, and when you have an All Ireland club, you're just going to have that confidence. So,
yeah.
So they will be confident going into it. Yeah, so we're going to take a short little, or you know what, no, we won't take a break.
Oh.
We'll talk a little bit about the Gaelic Football All-Stars while we're talking about Gaelic football, because Robbie Brennan brought it up when he said, listen, I am biased, of course, but he, Paul Manley, something about should have got an All-Star without a shadow of a doubt. I won't say it was a joke, but it was a bit of a strange one that he didn't get it, but I don't think it will bother him too much. I think he's happy enough to come down and do his business today. He obviously missed the Dublin team holiday, I think, as well.
Oh.
Robbie Brennan said, I think they're just gone in the last few days, so he said he's probably a bit more peeved off with that more than anything else. That was from the Irish Examiner. So yeah, the All-Star team, talk to me.
Well, poor Paul Mannion, in fairness, he's probably, I was trying to look at it, like, I mean, I wonder how many people won Man of the Match in an All-Ireland final and didn't get an All-Star. I'd say, you know, is he the only one?
There's probably a few.
Yeah,
but
probably
yeah.
Is, yeah, yeah. Because he was excellent. But when you look at that All-Star team, so like I picked the GAA Joe team of the year. I think I picked it on All-Ireland final day that night. And there's only 2 differences between
you were very close,
my team.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I had Carl O'Connell in ahead of Garth McGillness, and I had Cormac Costello in ahead of...
Cormac Costello, you had him in ahead of Enda Smith.
Enda Smith, yes, that's of course, yeah. And like, the thing about the All-Stars is, does Paul Mannion, Cormac Costello and Carl O'Connell deserve an All-Star? Yeah, they do deserve one. But does Garth McGillness...
not deserve one?
Yeah, no, you know, that's the thing. There just isn't enough room, really. So it's going to be unfair to whoever gets left out. I have no issues with the All-Star team, really. I mean, Carl O'Connell, maybe, like, he was just so fantastic all year. And he even when Monaghan were playing poorly, which they did on occasion, the game against Derry comes to mind, he was still always unbelievable. And
he was outstanding,
age, you know?
Like.
Yeah, like crazy, crazy good. But I think with Garth McGillness in that position, that he maybe wasn't as good as Carl all year in terms of consistency of over a season, but that semi-final against Kerry was like the stuff of...
He was unbelievable that day.
Crazy, crazy good. And it was so standout and so fresh in the memory. You couldn't... He needed a medal or something for that because he was unbelievable.
He even got injured that day. Like,
right at the end,
literally left everything out there that day.
Yeah, he had to get stretchered off in the end. He had the gas thing on and all. Like, I mean... He's already
was
on the
he back playing club. It wasn't in the cruciate anyway. It was
now there's so many different types of cruciate. Is it your
medial?
Medial, yeah. And it's maybe not quite as serious.
Was he back playing club? Or
I don't know if he made it back
from,
just in time. I know Ballinderry got relegated to intermediate, and that's the first time in years that's happened, because they were obviously such a dominant team in Derry for so long. And I could see him being injured being a reason for that, obviously.
Yeah, well, a lot of people were making a big deal out of the question. It was Marty asking about Mickey Hart coming in, saying and he was just like, of course. I don't think there was anything in that whatsoever. People were making out like that he was Like, it was,
what,
it
he doesn't
was a
like
sneer
yeah.
at Mickey Hart. Well, not a chance.
As if he's stupid enough to do that, first
why
of
would
all.
He, why would he do that? Not a chance. A lot of people like to jump on these small little clips.
Again, that's what I mean when I say it's the off-season and writers and journalists and stuff. They've so little to write about that they'll have to like.
Yeah, those damn journalists.
You know, I hate them. I hate them. There's, I can only think of one or two good ones. But
they're not sitting here.
No, definitely. No, then none. I can't think of any.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a funny one with the All-Stars. It's often said that if you don't make it to the business end, then you're in trouble and you're not going to make the team. Enda Smith didn't make it to the business end. He didn't make it to a quarterfinal, actually. They were beaten by Cork. And on the other hand, Corm Costello made it to the final. But the trouble for Corm Costello was that he had a bad final.
Yeah. But he was player of the year nominee going into
that. Yeah, exactly. But he's punished for having a bad final.
Yeah.
Like, the argument with the hurling is that there was nobody outside of the semi-finals got an All-Star. You know, so which side is it? It's kind of the best. Yeah. It's your cop between. It's catch 22. Like I, for the record, I think Enda Smith did deserve one, and because he got two man of the matches against Kildare, Mayo, and he was brilliant as well. In fairness, him on co-commentary in RT the other day. So good weekend for him.
Yeah. No, he was. He was fantastic for sure. Probably feel. Yeah, like a Cormac Costello, like you say, but I think that happened to Thomas Sullivan last year as well. Going into the final, Player of the Year nominee. You know, that's the sort of form he's in. And then, Shane Walsh happened to him in the final. So then, I don't think he ended up with an All-Star then. You know, like, you go from one extreme to the other so quickly. And then, like, in an example, like, so who got an All-Star? Someone like Shane McGuigan got one because he was excellent, fully deserved one. But if he had if Derry had got to the final and then they had a per final, would he have lost one?
He probably would have.
Do you know?
So maybe not because he was so good.
Yeah, well, that's it. He was also someone that was maybe in line to be a Player of the Year nominee.
Similar to Costa, I suppose, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a real headache. Like, I mean, I'm glad I'm not the one picking them, to be fair, although we all know that the GAA Joe team is the official real.
Yeah, that's
All-Stars.
The barometer.
That's it.
Yeah. All the rest is only small. Smothers, we need to get a GAA Joe ceremony, actually.
We do. That's it. And then I can ask Garth McKillen loads of awkward questions and make a big deal out of it.
Exactly.
What did you think of Clifford getting Player of the Year?
It was him or Rogers for me. Mm-hmm. I thought Rogers was outstanding. I was on the fence. What do you think?
Yeah.
Throwing it back at you.
Thanks, that worked well. I think so. Was he the best player this year? I think so. Yeah, he probably was. Rogers was outstanding, but then it's that thing, he didn't play the final. And he could have had a bad final, you know?
Yeah.
Did Clifford really have a terrible final? He still kicked 2 points, you know, and won a lot of balls.
It's by
and
his
stuff.
Standards.
It's just by his standards, yeah. And then after watching him for Fossa at the weekend, that highlights reel, it's like there is no doubt that man is the best Gaelic footballer on the planet, bar none. And it's just crazy what that man can do. So I don't think there's too many arguments, really.
Yeah, we actually still have to talk about Fossa. I was going to move on to hurling without that. Sure. Yeah, Clifford, I suppose it was the Clifford show, like David and Paddy. Paddy was unbelievable as well. I got to switch this one on to Clubber at different stages as well. It was hard to keep up with it all, to be honest. Now, I'm not even trying to be funny here. It was actually just, I was getting a headache trying to watch it all. But yeah, sure, you've seen David Clifford's highlights.
Yeah.
The two men on him, the Paren, who has played for Mid-Kerry and has been on Kerry underage panels, and he was just glued to Clifford. There's another man sweeping in front of him and he still kicks 12 points, 6 from play and a mark. You've seen the highlights.
Yeah, I mean, frightening. And it's not like it was just your run-of-the-mill points. I mean, the dummies and the moves he was making in every angle, each foot. I don't know. Like, it's a highlights reel that you would be proud of if it was a collection of points you scored throughout your entire career. Yeah, but he did it in one game, and that's what you expect from him. And like, I'm sure he's devastated, him and Paddy, but a break for them boys may not be the worst thing in the world, because they've been non-stop, you know, with obviously getting to the junior final last year and then to back-to-back All-Ireland finals with Kerry. Maybe just a month off from football would be do them the world of good and come back refreshed and re-energized.
Yeah, like David kicked his first wide in the 61st minute. That was off the right foot, and it would have been an unbelievable score. Yeah. They were a point down at this stage. Milton Castlemaine had just got their second goal. So Fossa had looked like winners before that goal. Dave kicked wide off the right, would have been, as I said, an unbelievable score. Then he missed a free off the left on the 21 at the sideline. It was similar enough to the one that he'd got against Galway in the All-Ireland final last year. Kicked that wide to the right, was unlucky. They had another chance then, they got an indirect free. It kind of seemed in the last minute that every Fossett player, they were just looking. Obviously, you're not going to blame them for looking for David or Paddy, but it nearly got a bit too predictable. And there was maybe one time they had a chance. But look, it's at the end of the game, and Milltown Castlemaine held on. Jack O'Connor's son was man of the match, Aidan O'Connor. He got 8 points. So, yeah, it was.
He played in Kildare for years.
He was with Moorfield, yeah, he was. When they won that Leinster.
He was part of that Leinster winning team and all, yeah. Him and the brother, both of them were in the Kildare.
Keane O'Connor, yeah, I think he was involved as well.
That's crazy. And then they just came, and it's not even, that's not their home club from Kerry, is it?
Well, Jack's home club is Drummond Pierce's, isn't it?
But it depends where, obviously, they live now. These are the things we should do before the show. Yeah. Let's find out.
I know. Yeah, we should. But yeah, just the Cliffords, like, just while we're talking about David, like, I thought his interviews, like, he's just, the interviews of the All-Stars, like, some of the questions that would be asked to people at them All-Stars were just a little bit awkward, kind of, at times. Like, you'd, Stephen Cluxton wouldn't even talk, which was a little bit like, would you not just say a word or two? Like,
I know, thank you, even.
Yeah, they obviously were pre-warned, like, just don't ask him a question.
Yeah.
But, yeah, David Clifford, there were so many interviews of him, and just his answers are just, he's nearly as good off the field as he is on it. Like.
Yeah, no, he is. He just conducts himself so well. He really is a genuine role model for everyone to look up to because of the pressure that he takes on his shoulders, and he just seems to carry it so effortlessly. And just because you're a good footballer doesn't mean you're going to be good on camera. When you're on national TV and someone sticks a mic in your face, you know, you could just be, I'm here to play football or whatever. But he takes it so well. He talks so eloquently and honestly, and yeah, I mean, you can't help but not like him, although I'm sure there's a lot of defenders that don't. But, I'd say they all definitely respect him, at least.
Yeah, like, imagine marking him. Like, your man, Paren, was glued to him for the game. And did you see the mark Clifford got? Like, it was just, I don't know, unbelievable stuff. Like, it was disappointing. He didn't deserve to end it that way with a miss free, but I think anyone knows that, like, he was the reason.
Yeah,
between himself and Paddy. Paddy was unbelievable as well, like, just
another one deserving of his All-Star. He had a great final.
Oh, unbelievable. He was unbelievable in the final, kicking points when Kerry really needed him. Like, and he's just playing. He's gone to another level as well. Like, and sometimes it's lost because David's so good, but Paddy is just, he's nearly, I'd nearly say he is, like, in the top two or three footballers in the country himself. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's definitely knocking on that door. Like, that's how consistent he's been in these top performances at the very top level. Mm. And it isn't just a one-man show with David Clifford, but it may be a two-man show with the Cliffords, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Foss obviously have other good players as well. Course, like, O'Shea is very good and so on. We're going to be back with hurling, which I'm really looking forward to getting into, Lee.
Of course, me too.
Okay, so Kildannion and Clonlara was, this was edge of the seat stuff. Like, I had St. Lomans and Naas on, and for the first few minutes of the game, I was still watching, because you know when you're engrossed in one game, you just stick with it. But the hurling soon took over. An unbelievable game. Obviously, it was the two red cards had huge, huge bearings on the game. Kildannion had a slow start. Clonlara were going very well. John Conlon was doing his thing, fresh from winning his All-Star. But Dan O'Mara got a goal that brought Kildannion back into the game, and it was tight going in at half-time. Clonlara maybe 2 points up, but they had the wind. And then Kildannion, Dan O'Mara was sent off 5 minutes after half-time. You've seen this when it was the dig into the crown jewels. Like, it wasn't pretty, and it was a good spot for the linesman because it happened very quick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he could have any excuses about that.
No, but he obviously thought he was going to get away with it because it was such a dunt.
Yeah.
You know, really. Yeah. He thought he was being subtle anyway, but how subtle can you be when you're hitting someone there?
Exactly. The second one, Kildannion would have more grounds for complaint. Yeah. I'd say it was kind of a blind pull from Sean Hayes. He kind of lost the ball and kind of swung with his body as his momentum was taking him.
Yeah.
But he still did catch a man on the heel. It's one of the manager wasn't happy with it, but
you're probably looking at it even more though because you've already got a man sent off. Do you know if that was the only red card?
Yeah, you feel you were hard done by, like.
Yeah, yeah. So you just sort of, you can't help but have two men sent off, even if they were technically deserved, that you're, something's against you.
Yeah, yeah. Like the Hayes one, I'd be on the fence about that. I think maybe he was a small, but look, I don't think there was too much intent, but he still did hit a lad. Do you know, it was a strike and offence, I suppose, by the letter of the law. But yeah, Kildanian were two men down with 47 minutes gone. And you're thinking like, the game is over. Like, because Clonlara were in the driving seat at that stage. They had probably done more of the hurling. But Kildanian are just, they're an unbelievable team to work the ball through the lines. And they needed to be. When you're down to 13 men, you can't afford to hit the ball away.
Yeah.
But if there's any team who can manage that, it's Kildanian because they're so composed. I put a video up on my Twitter of the score Alan Flynn got to put them one up. It was 2 minutes left in the game. Like, this is a incredible score. Like, yeah. You've seen it there. There was 9 passes in it, 5 hand passes. Clonlara are the lads with 2 extra men here, and Kildanian are making it look like it's the other way around. And Alan Flynn took it over. Like, that was just an incredible score in those circumstances. You're 2 down.
Yeah.
It's the game is level. It's in the melting pot. And this near the end of the game, like, the composure there was unbelievable, I thought.
Yeah, it's incredible. And then it's just accentuated by the fact that, you know, they had 2 less men on the pitch, but they looked like they had more, and they looked like there was loads of space. They were somehow making better advantage of it than the opposition were.
That's just what they do. Like, it's like nearly a football team just doing it, working it so well.
Yeah, and even switching the play and how they just know where the space is and then go and attack. And then I was going to ask you even... How does a red card really look in hurling in terms of, like, what's the team that's now got the numerical advantage do? You know, because in football, more often than not, a player just becomes a sweeper, or it becomes 2 sweepers. You might as well shore up the defence while you still got your attack going. But in hurling, what would that look like? You know, you've got 2 men sent off.
Yeah, well, automatically, like, you might as well just hit a sharp pocket because you will have a free man in the full back line.
Yeah.
You're one of another free man, so you should be able to work the ball up the field. Easier than the normal. But Clonlara didn't seem to do that. They kind of lost their heads a small bit with those. Sometimes it does, the red card gets into your head. And that's what John Conlon said after the game, that it can go either way. But they did. They'll be disappointed with how they played in those 15 minutes because Kildanian completely took over the game. Billy Seymour played a big part in that. He scored 4 from play. But Alan Flynn was just unbelievable in those close moments. He'd won 2 frees, then got that point at the end of the great team move to put them in the lead. And then it was like you fell for him because having had such a good game, he gave away the pass that led to Clonlara's winning score for Diarmaid Stritch, who is only 18 years of age. And the manager, Donal Madden, had said that he was about to take him off just before this. So... lucky he left him on. You have to praise Clonlara too that they did come back from.
Yeah, they found a way. Yeah,
because they had hit a wide in injury time, and it looked like this was it. Like,
yeah.
They found a way, and just an extremely exciting game. I suppose the red cards, it kind of adds to the.
Of course, it does. Yeah,
it adds to it. Like,
and then the team with the 2 less, they had to work so much harder, and that's probably what led to that mistake. Even in the end, because you're just so exhausted.
Exactly.
You know, you got to cover so much more ground. You got to be so sure of every pass, like the mental focus that you would need, you know, because you've got less options to hit. So you really got to be sure of it. And you know that, like, a turnover can be so costly then because, you know, you're literally exposed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Another disappointing result, like, for, like, Killian were lucky, but Tipperary clubs just haven't been going brilliant in Munster. In recent times, just hasn't gone well, and a good win for the Clare champions. They're going to be up against Ballygunner, so like they will be up against it. Ballygunner are going for 3 in a row. So the Ballygunner and the Pearcy game, it was kind of billed as the big one of the day, and it was at 4 o'clock, but it couldn't live up to Clonlara and Kildanian. Maybe it was just me. I had watched so many games, but I just was disappointed with it was slow to get going. just a bit dead for some reason.
It always feels that way that when the first game is just so exciting.
Yeah, usually we say it's because it's a football game and like it's never going to live up to Haaland. That's what we always say. But
down in your end.
Yeah.
And I always, when I think the best example of that, that, or the example that always comes to my head, and I know because it was working, I think you were at it, Armagh and Galway, that All-Ireland quarterfinal that was Kerry. An absolute barnstormer. And then it was Mayo and Kerry afterwards, which in any other day would be headline stuff.
Yeah.
But
you were struggling to watch it.
I could not keep my eyes on it, like, because I was just so emotionally drained nearly from the first time round. But at the same time, it shouldn't really have too much effect on the players. You probably didn't even see the first game, so it is weird.
It was a bit of that, but it was just, I don't know, where the two teams kind of scoping each other out for parts of it. Yeah, Napiershik especially, they were kind of disappointing. They played a lot of short ball, and they only kind of came into the game when they had to, you know, the shackles are off in the last few minutes. They were 5 or 6 down, and they just started raining balls in on top of the Ballygunner, the edge of the square, and they got a goal out of it, and they could easily got a levelling goal. Stephen O'Keefe made a great save at the finish. But like Napiershik, they have a full forward line. They have Adrian Breen, you've Kevin Downes, you've Ron Lynch was up there, Peter Casey didn't score from play yesterday, which is unbelievable for a player of his calibre. Like, but you'd think you'd let the ball into them, you know, when you have a full forward line as dangerous as that, because Ballygunner were under a bit of pressure at the finish when it was all hands on deck.
Yeah, I don't know if that's maybe just paying too much respect. I think you were saying Ballygunner are going for 3 in a row.
Yeah.
Munster, they'll be the first team in Munster to do that, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, they built, as we said earlier, like a real aura about them, and sometimes you can do that. You become so afraid of what they can do that you just end up playing almost within yourself, and then when you say the shackles come off, sure, it's too late.
It was too late. It took a kind of a scrap before half time to kind of to grab my attention. They got stuck into each other, and then straight into the second half they were getting stuck into each other as well. There were a few things. Pádraig Mahony, man of the match, second Munster final in a row to get man of the match. Like, you talk about big game players, he was incredible yesterday, and he got 11 points, 6 frees, 2 65s, 3 from play. But he's a man now that retired from Waterford last year, and he just looks like he's even better. He looks faster, fit, everything. He just looks to be a better player since that.
Yeah.
So can you make sense of that? Like, do you think?
Well, probably just like
freshness.
Yeah, there's less load on your body, isn't there? You've got one thing to focus on rather than, you know, trying to manage yourself for the intercounty season, peaking for it, and then doing a quick rebuild to try and peak again
for a long club season.
Yeah,
for him, like,
exactly,
you know, Ballygunner going all the way, like,
that's it. Like, and you know, if it was at a different club, maybe it would be different, but with Ballygunner, just it's an all year round job, isn't it? I just think that's probably what it is, isn't it? And then the mental sort of freshness as well, you know, you've got that one focus, one club, one life, all that sort of thing. I would say too, yeah, it's just, that must be it. I can't think of any reason, because it's not like playing inter-county level hinders players. It often does bring others on, you know, because you're playing at such a high level, but like, it'd be hard to get higher than Ballygunner.
That mental break, I suppose, is definitely a thing as well, like, because you can focus on the club. You've been there all year. That's what you're kind of dreaming about. Like,
even the traveling, all the training, and the different matches all over the country at that stage and things. And yeah, that has to be and it's because it's a slow build, isn't it? Like, I mean, say from Club All-Ireland, then you're into the league, but like, you know, it's, everyone knows it's not balls to the walls of the league, and you can rebuild and get yourself back into tip-top shape for championship, knowing that hopefully it's going to be a really long season. But if you have the inter-county season before that, do you know, there's just nowhere for the body to catch a break.
Exactly. So Pádraig Mahony, he's moving better than ever now, and you'd fancy them to beat Clanlaret in that Munster final, and to go on another run. They'd be very hard to beat. Like, I didn't think they were brilliant yesterday, but there were six, seven points up with 5 minutes to go. Like, so that shows you the level there at Desi Hutchinson, Boston at Peter Hogan, brilliant wing forward, Paddy Levy. He has his own, his little scoop pass. He doesn't bother with the hand pass. He just scoops it around, and he's absolutely brilliant at that. So they're going well. The Ulster semi-final, Ulster Club Hurling semi-final was an absolute belter between Cushendall and Portaferry. Portaferry, they will wake up absolutely heartbroken this morning, Lee, because 3 points up with time as good as up, you think you're home. Like,
that's it, yeah. And like Portaferry, you know, they'd have been going into this match really as the underdogs. Not many were going to predict them beating Cushendall, especially how Cushendall went through the Antrim, you know, and like, because so many had thought Dunloy were going to go and dominate it, you know, so for a Cushendall side to come out of it.
Apparently the football, Dunloy did very well in the football this
year. Oh yeah, they got all the way to the final against Corrigan. They just maybe just ran out of steam a wee bit.
Probably ran out of steam in the hurling.
And they'd won the intermediate championship in football the year before.
Right.
So like they've got a real group of dual players.
They've been they got to the Ireland final in the hurling last year. Like, so it's been a long road, you know.
That's it. Like, it's boys that are just used to big days and stepping up to the occasions. So it was a really good story with them in the football. But yeah, no, so for Cushendall to, you know, be the way they are, like, no one gave Portaferry a chance. And they played so well, they gave everything. And to be three up, but up steps Neil McManus. I mean, what a man. There's another fella that retired from Intercounty Hurling this year. Mm. He scores a goal from free right at the death, puts it into the bottom right corner, and it was just
like the goalie was unlucky. He stepped out to try and save it, but McManus had bounced it low and it kind of deflected in off the goalie. You wouldn't blame him whatsoever. It was just a brilliant shot, a wet day.
Yeah,
McManus was clever, bounced it along the ground. Like, that is heartbreak. Like, that is for them.
And it did break their hearts because in extra time they went on and they got well beaten.
Lost
in the end,
by,
you know,
11 but points. Yeah.
They just had nothing left to give then, you know, like everything. They mustered up everything for that 60 minutes plus.
Exactly.
And it was stole from them. But Cushendall will take a lot from that.
Absolutely. Absolutely they will. Like, Neil McManus, he scored 114.
Yeah.
Like, 7 points from play. 35 years old. I know he was on the show earlier in the year and he was telling us that, you know, the body was at him a small bit, like, but the body doesn't seem to be at him there, or else he's just powering on through it.
Yeah.
So there, it wasn't just Neil McManus. Joseph McLaughlin, Neil McManus actually talked about him in his interview after. He just said that it's not even the talent and the skill, it's the, you know, the attitude this set has that he loves. Playing with him, this had scored 2-5, and he's doing his leaving cert or his A levels, is it?
His A levels, up north, yeah.
So
like his real qualifications, yeah.
Yeah. So that's some going, isn't it? To be having 2-5 and you're in your leaving cert.
Yeah, I'd say he was rushed straight home, set to the kitchen table, get revised.
Do your homework.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they have Slotneil coming up in the Ulster final, so that'll be a brilliant game. Both Cushendall and Slotneil are teams who have made huge impacts on All-Ireland Club Championships. Slotneil, twice, they had a good game against the Pearcy, but they nearly had Ballyhale one day. I think that was up in Belfast.
Mm-hmm.
Cushendall had got to an All-Ireland Club Final before, so in recent years. So that's going to be a great game. And they'll be players when it comes down to the All-Ireland Club series. Just the last thing we will mention is the disappointment with the announcement from the GAA Central Competitions Control Committee during the week, where they recommended that any hurling county with fewer than 5 adult teams should compete in just the Lowry Maher Cup from 2025 onwards. So they're taking away the league. So that's for Cavan, Fermanagh, Leitrim, Longford and Louth, if it's passed. So this would be very disappointing. Like, they're saying that the money that they're going to save, and it is a substantial amount of money, that they're going to plough it into hurling, to develop in hurling, you know, at the grassroots, I suppose, as they say. But like, that is like, why are you punishing, number one, like, why are you punishing the players that are currently playing?
Yeah.
Why are you punishing them to build for the future? Like, why do you take it out on them? Like, for young players, are they going to be inspired looking at their flagship team and they're not allowed to play in a league?
Yeah.
Like, how is that any way to go about
No, none of it makes much sense to me. And then they talk about this money, but it, to me, that's so vague. Like, I mean, how much of it are they going to see? And what are they going to see it on? They said equipment. Like, does a team that has very few, or a county that has very few clubs, do they need a load of hurls? Is that the issue? There's not enough hurls for them, do you know? It doesn't make any sense for the development of hurling at all. And like, a lot of them teams are in the north or on the border anyway. And we know that hurling isn't as big a hotbed up there. And I just don't see how taking away their representations in the highest level in the most frequent games will help the game at all. And then when do you bring them back? Like, at what point is it okay after this big grassroots sort of funding? Do you know, like, what's the end game really, other than the money?
They're punishing teams. And in fairness, the teams have dropped clubs, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, some clubs have just folded in those counties that we mentioned. Like, their barometer for it was fewer than 5 adult hurling teams. Like, so it literally, like, that just, even just listen to that. If you have fewer than 5 adult hurling teams, like, we're going to take it away. Like, yeah. It's as if you're just going to, if you're a little bit weak, you're struggling, we're just going to shoot you. Like, that's it. Like.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean,
it's a cost. You should
be giving them a leg up. Like, yeah. You know, rather than taking a leg away. Like, it doesn't, that is what it is. It's a cost saving exercise. And they're trying to do it under the umbrella of grassroots and funding and rebuilding.
That's
and
a cop out. Like.
But I would, you know, you'd nearly have to demand to make every penny public. Like, well, I want to see every bit. So you say you're going to give this much to Cavan, this much to Leitrim, Fermanagh, whatever. I want to see it all, you know, on paper, and I want to see what it's spent on, and let's see then.
It's the county boards themselves too, though. Like, you know, they could easily be like pushing this, you know, and they could be put the money towards football. Like, you just don't know.
They did,
like,
delegate toward with them, didn't they? Like, where's the money going to go once you give it to them? Like, I mean, I just think, no, it doesn't.
It was good to see Tom Parsons and the GPS sticking up for them at the All Stars. Like, something had to be said. There's obviously a decision to be made in that. Hopefully they'll make the right one. Just before we finish off, small bit on the hurling All-Stars. I thought the team was, I'd say it was probably the one year at the All-Stars where it was more, there was less complaints than usual. Like,
Across the board.
Yeah. The main one in the hurling was that some people felt TJ Reid was lucky to get one.
You felt TJ Reid was lucky?
Yeah, well, I didn't have TJ Reid on my team. I actually had David Fitzgerald in there, and I had a little reshuffle. I also actually had Cathal Mannion on mine. He didn't really get much of a mention when it came down to it. Many people thought Tony Kelly should have got ahead of TJ Reid. Mm-hmm. Tony Kelly got like 3 Man of the Match awards. He was the top scorer from play in the championship. Just had a very disappointing semi-final where he never got going. Mikey Butler tagged him and kind of took him out of the game. But it's like what we were saying earlier, Lee.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can get punished.
Yeah,
You get there,
you can lose it all. Nearly,
you can lose it all
in the build up of it. Yeah, and then what do you think of Player of the Year?
I thought it was an absolute shoe, and it had to be Aaron Gillan.
Yeah,
I think he's the best hurler in the country without a shadow of a doubt, and deservedly won it. So Patrick Swell have now won three hurlers of the year. Keane Lynch, actually 4. Keane Lynch won it twice. Darren Burns and Aaron Gillan. So yeah. Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just fair play to them.
Yeah, fair play to them. And that is a good note to end it on. That's us for this week, but we'll be back again next week. It's a big it's a big hurling week. We've got the Leinster Club semi-finals next weekend, but we also have the Ulster Club football.
Yes.
And the Munster Club football.
Ulster Club football.
And the Munster Club football. So we're looking forward to next week. See you all then.
Sports Joe presents the GAA Hour.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.